is to take it in turns. I hope that Peter doesn't disagree with what I've said. About 18 years ago, I was in America. The family there were awaiting the birth of their third child, and I'd gone over to give a hand. And one morning, I was helping Jordan make her bed, and she said, looked up quizzically, "Nana, how did you get to be so old?" I just gulped and I said, "Well, Jordan, how did you get to be five?" "I've had five birthdays." "Hey, isn't that simple?" So I just said, "Well, I've had lots of birthdays." So I'll tell you that not just because it's a cute story, the rest of it's even cuter, but I want to illustrate the journey I've also had, not just getting older, but in my path with God, I've had what I might call rebirthdays. And that's what I'm going to talk about today. The image that is useful to me is one of an animal outgrowing its skin. And I was very interested to read once upon a time that the Hasidic Jews say that the verb that God used when he asked Moses to remove his shoes, that's before the bush that was aflame, was the ancient word for an animal shedding its skin. God said, "Shed your shoes." So my experiences of God over the years have revealed a God of unimaginable otherness, who is much larger than I could otherwise have known, and yet who is immediately present. And in that knowing, I have grown and changed. So here are a few examples. You can't tell 70 plus years in 15 minutes, so here we go, that's all I've got. So my devout Christian parents sent me off on the road towards God. They also loaded me up with quite a heavy backpack of the rules I needed to obey to keep God happy, and also the teaching that God does not speak today. Once the Bible was written, my father said, God no longer spoke. You went to the Bible, and that's where you got your answers. Now, the problem is, as a teenager growing up in the 1960s, I didn't find much in the Bible that spoke to my situation. But decisions had to be made, and the significant ones of that time were obviously marrying Peter in 1969, going on a short-term mission trip to Fiji in 1970. Peter and I were living in South Australia at the time, but we met Jenny Powell, she was then there, and met other New Zealanders, which in the end led us to go that same year to start a year at Assembly Bible School in Auckland. We went back to South Australia, but in 1978, with our three young boys, we moved to New Zealand for a rather long couple of years. So looking back, I call those good decisions, ones made prayerfully with good intentions. Right decisions are much more challenging as we don't know the outcomes until we look back. But I'm very thankful that over the years I've learnt other ways of discerning and God's guidance. So in the early 1980s, we were living in Morrinsville, and that's when I encountered the charismatic movement. And it was there that my experiences of God showed me that God does speak today. And one lovely little story I wanted to tell you. We were moving back to Rotorua, and we needed to find a place to rent. So Peter and I had spent a Saturday looking at all the options. They were dirty, they were overpriced. It was an absolutely depressing day. And as we were driving out of town, thinking, what on earth are we going to do? Some words popped into my head. I've got something much better for you. Was that God? I had no idea, but I thought, oh, that sounds good. And that actually was God, because we ended up living in a two-story, thermally heated house in the best part of town for the next year. So over the years, I might now need to take out one of these weights that I've thrown in here. My load got lighter because I believe that God actually could speak to me today. In fact, I like to say that all the world is God's voice if we only know how to listen. moving ahead, 1993. We were living in Hamilton. Peter was the pastor of Fairfield Baptist Church. And I had just resigned my position as the manager of the Hamilton Training Centre run by the Salvation Army Employment Programs. It was a decision I'd sensed God asking me to make, but I did it quite hesitantly because we actually needed my income to make ends meet. In March, I had the wonderful privilege of attending a retreat led by Joyce Huggett. She was from England, and she was the author of many books, including Listening to God. So I hoped that if I went, I'd come away with an answer as what I was to do once I'd left work. Wrong. Instead of that, God asked me a question, which basically, summing it all up, would say, would I obey God no matter what God asked me to do? And the way it was presented to me was quite daunting. It took me the whole retreat to say yes, and I came home feeling quite shattered. So I left, oh, that's right, and so this week I've just read that from Walter Brueggemann, God's promise always comes in the midst of a hard, deep call to obedience. So I left without answers, but I left with a wonderful support group of people who helped me grow and expand in my ways of experiencing and knowing God. This included a monthly session with a spiritual director where I could unpack all I was learning. I learnt various ways of reading scripture, working with dreams, contemplative prayer, and listening for the voice and the promptings of the Spirit. I was exposed to other streams of the Christian faith, the contemplative, social justice, holiness, incarnation, and I began to weave them in to the word-based stream that I'd grown up in. My load was getting lighter because I knew that the way I'd grown up with Christianity was much bigger than I'd been taught. In early 1996, an inconvenient truth dropped into my mind. It was quite against what was going on at the time, and it popped in, and I thought, it didn't make sense. It didn't go away. It niggled, and it grew. I sought advice, which turned out to be most unhelpful. So in the middle of the year, I decided I had a choice. I'd rather risk obeying what might be the voice of God and get it wrong than not obey if it was what God was saying. So I stopped attending church, which is difficult when your husband's the pastor. But on the last Sunday, a person who I had huge respect for came up to me, and she said that she sensed that God was asking me to not stop going to church for a while. I didn't get confirmation for that decision from anyone until I made the decision, which I found was rather interesting. And it was only in looking back that I recognised that I'd lived in Peter's shadow, I'd helped him in his roles, and that church had quite long, strong expectations for a pastor's wife. So for me to live the life God intended for me, I had to step right out of that situation to hear more clearly. So I ditched another expectation. My load's getting lighter. I know that God's got a plan for me, which may or may not include roles associated with Peter. So, moving on to 2000, we were in Nowra, New South Wales. Yep, we have moved around quite a bit. And the story of us getting there is just too big to tell in this morning. But it was something we thought God was telling us to do. It was really challenging to be uprooted from family and friends. It was amazing the timing, though. The three sons had all just or had been married. The last one, the middle son was the last one to get married, and he was married a couple of months before we headed out. But anyway, there we were in Nowra, no plans, not knowing what to do, and we had a lot of time to read. And in July, I was reading a book that I'd got from the library and by a British theologian. theologian Alistair McGrath. And from memory was his Christian Theology, An Introduction. And it's a highly recommended book, still used as a training tool. It's had 6 editions. One section he politely calls the debates, which were dating back to the early years of the Christian era. And I wrote in my journal, I wonder if theology isn't just fights about our own ideas and opinions. Because after my years of learning at the feet of the wise and gentle teachers in spiritual growth ministries, and recently in Washington, D.C., where we had just been, I was shocked and disappointed. I didn't see much of the spirit of Jesus or of the ability to prayerfully discern in these so-called giants of the Christian faith who are debating these, fighting over these ideas. Well, I tried to tell Peter what was going on for me, and I was actually quite shocked by his really strong negative reaction against what I was saying, and I felt quite crushed because I still wasn't particularly confident in my own, trusting my own voice. So I prayed about it and I slept on it, and I thought, when I woke up the next morning, I thought, you know, this is what I think. I just have to hold on to that. During the morning, there was a knock at the door. So I went to answer it, actually expecting a salesperson, because they were the only people that came to our door in those days. But I was very thankfully surprised to see there was a woman who had got to know a little bit from our local church. I invited her in, and she started to tell me about a course in Christian spirituality that she was doing, and she wanted to tell me what she was heard that week. And as she started, I just looked at her. I just was aghast. I said, God sent you, didn't he? She said, yep, I couldn't get you out of my mind all morning. And she actually made an excuse for coming up. She said, I tried to ring several times, but I couldn't get through. Now, some of you might be old enough to remember the days of dial-up internet. Well, Peter had been on the internet all morning, so the phone would not work. That was a thing. And this is what she said to me. To be a theologian, and she was quoting what a theologian had said, to be a theologian, one first must be a mystic. Now, I know some people get a bit antsy about that word, but really it's quite simple. It's simply one who's moved from mere belief or belonging systems to actual inner experience of God. And it was an actual inner experience that I began to experience and I didn't see in that book that I was reading. So what do you think about that? Pretty special, eh? But I'm going to turn my page. I've got to keep to my notes or else I'll run out of it. I'll go over time. So God sent someone to make sure that I kept believing what I'd come to see. And it made me think, hey, this is really important. If it had just been me resolving it, I would have said, oh no, but this was so deliberate and something that outside my control that I go back to it every now and then when I'm doubting my own voice. And interesting, just as I was preparing these words the other day, I came across this. Jesus' words didn't lend themselves to building theological systems. Jesus' words were like flashes of light and inspiration. To generalize about the words of Jesus is to depower them. They need to be heard in the depths of the heart and recklessly lived in the power of heart, of power of faith. So my bag's a lot lighter now. And I'm going to tell you in a minute what I've got left in there. Although I actually don't know, do I? I know when my next physical birthday is. It's very close. I don't know when my next rebirth day will be. Maybe there's more to come. But this is where I'm up to right now. There's 2 texts I find very helpful. One's in John 5 that Jesus said, I tell you the truth, the Son can do nothing on his own. He does only what he sees his Father doing. What the Father does, the Son does. So day by day, I look for God's guidance. I keep an ear open throughout the day. Sometimes if I'm not sure what I'm going to do next, what comes to mind. I'd look for the prompts of the Spirit. Because another verse that speaks out for me is in John 10, my sheep hear my voice. So I've come a long way from being told that God doesn't speak to know that God speaks to me day by day. And I finish with something I've told you before, but it bears repeating for me, and you probably don't even remember I've said it. This is, again, quoting someone else. Nothing is more practical than finding God, than falling in love in a quite absolute, final way. What you're in love with, what seizes your imagination, will affect everything. It will decide what will get you out of bed in the morning, what you do with your evenings, how you spend your weekends, what you read, who you know, what breaks your heart, and what amazes you with joy and gratitude. Fall in love, stay in love, and it will decide everything. Thank you.
I'll just take it off. All right, that'll work.
Yeah.
Thank you. Good. Yeah. Test, test. Boom, boom. Thank you, dear. Now, the thing that we came to agree on when some of us got together and decided on this series of guidance was we wanted to make sure that there was not one system that we're trying to teach people on how to hear from God or how to follow God. So John's talk last week is very different to Christine's, and I'll be very different to Christine, and whoever follows will be different, and that's very important because there is no formula. There is no one special verse. So I'm going to tell you two stories this morning, and that's all. In preface, however, I want to say, firstly, that you won't find verses quoted from us about God gave us a verse. But secondly, what comes from us in terms of guidance comes from lives that are very committed to God and to doing His will. The first story comes when I was about 19. Young Christian, very committed to God, very keen, involved in the YMCA in Adelaide. We just finished a camp, a young men's camp, and we were getting together for a bit of a debrief, and the secretary of the YMCA, or one of the secretaries of the branches, got us together. He was much older than us and said, "What do you think?" And so we discussed what went on and all the rest of it, and we were very happy with the results. He said, "I've been asked to open up another YMCA in the north of Adelaide. And it's a volunteer position. They have a small building, probably about half the size of this, on a couple of 2 or 3 acres of land in a whole brand new city, really. And so I've decided to take it." So we're going up there, and he said, "This makes me reflect, however, on where you're going as young men." And it was sort of about all that he read, all that he said. But there's just something like an arrow from heaven. I thought, I'm going with him. So I left my job. I left home and I joined him in Elizabeth, this northern city, to help build up a brand new YMCA. He had no job, I had no job. He arranged a room in a lady's house, which was taking on boarders. Unfortunately, there was only one room, so we shared the room and didn't share the beds, but we had two beds. And we had to find part-time jobs in that. So that's how I started in my full-time Christian work. Completely out of the blue, but very deeply believing that this is what God wanted me to do. So I was in that YMCA for a number of years. He went overseas as a missionary. I continued on. And then policies changed in the YMCA then, and they didn't want it to be so evangelical. It's a very wonderful time. We saw many young men come to the Lord, and they were the beginning of a brand new church that we started in that area. The second story goes a few years later. I was married with three children, and I was in full-time work. I didn't take on a job, that's all. The assembly helped support me, but there was no guarantee, there was no pay, there was nothing. It was just completely faith. But I was committed to what I was doing, doing visitation in the area, doing children's programs, and etc. And there was just something, like Christine said in her words, sort of something that niggled, that I wanted to discover more in terms of, I don't know what it was really. I think what if you'd asked me, I would have said I wanted to discover how to run a sort of in church Bible school type of thing. But I had no experience with that, and so other than going to the Auckland Bible School, which was a live-in thing, which is not what I had in mind, and I thought there's something niggling here, and I wasn't quite sure what, but I needed to do some investigation. So I wrote three letters to three institutions, one in Sydney, one in Melbourne, and one in Rotorua. And our conviction was that the first person to respond positively, saying, yes, we think we might be able to work with you on what we're coming to, what we're doing and what you might be wanting to do. The first person to reply positively would be our guidance. So it doesn't sound very spiritual, does it? Except that there is a precedent in the Old Testament where Gideon put out a fleece, a lamb's fleece. All right, and so you that know the Bible know the story. He did it three times. So this was my Gideon's test, if you like. So we waited. I mean, this was not internet days, right? No emails. This was waiting for a letter to come into the letterbox at home. And one came through and said, no, we don't see any relationship to where you're going and what we're doing. So that was fine. And we waited. And we waited. Do you know what it's like to wait? You go to the letterbox every day? Because this was going to be life-changing stuff for us. Eventually a letter came. And it came from New Zealand. And Cess Hilton, who rang the Kiwi Ranchers camps all through New Zealand, said, we have been praying for someone. And we think that we're on to a good thing here. He'd never met me, I'd never met him. And so it was just two people saying yes to what God might be doing. So we corresponded further and we ended up making the decision to go to New Zealand. And that was 45, 46 years ago. The third letter came. Sorry, your letter got missed and put away in the Christmas rush. and we've only just read it, and yes, there are possibilities, but our decision had already been made. That was from Melbourne. So that's why we're in New Zealand. And that's how it works. Let's pray. Jesus, it seems to me it's not so much what we know, but who we know. And Christine and I know you, and we know you in different ways. And yet that's absolutely fine for you. And we hear from you in different ways, and so do people here in this church. And you're a God of manifold possibilities and options. May we never, ever put you into a box that tells you what you should do and how you should do it. We give you glory and we give you thanks for every element of guidance and leading we have had over our years. And we praise you for that. And may we be faithful and obedient to what we hear or think we hear, and step out in faith. Amen. There are morning tea being served soon, I think, a get together. Here's a